Say, hey, it's Peter, and I know, it's me, really, I promise. This episode is with garden designer Jo Thompson. I was about to say she needs no introduction, but then says you, Panto crowd, listening at home, it would be pointless me interviewing her if she needed no introduction. I've just killed a joke, didn't I? I did. Anyhow, we are, just to give you an idea of location, we're in the car park of Battersea Park in London. And so there's all of the sounds of the birds, and I was going to say the birds and the bees, but there's all of the sounds that you should expect in a park. But there's also all of the sounds of a car park and London. And we're sitting on a trailer, an Ifor Williams trailer, to be pedantically exact. And I hope the recording is okay. The other thing to note is that it's in two parts. I don't know why it's in two parts, but we ran short of time, essentially because I changed the battery. And then myself and Joe just got talking anyway. Yeah, which is not much good to you. But it's still Jo Thompson, and she's an absolute legend. And I have to give a huge dollop of thanks. It's not even a correct word to use, but a huge something of thanks. Send me a note on Twitter with an appropriate word to London College of Garden Design for helping me piece this one together. It's a funny one when people decide to help out the sideshow, but I'm very grateful to them for doing that. And Joe, and also you for listening. Because if you didn't, it'd just be me talking to myself. Anyhow, if you subscribe to the Sideshow or you're not already subscribed in Spotify or iTunes or one of those things that are on your telephone, part two will pop up on your radar. Not next week, but the week after. Thanks for everything, and thanks for listening. And if you get a minute, send London College of Garden Design a quick note and just tell them you enjoyed what you heard. Take care and enjoy.
I'm with Jo Thompson. You should say hello, Jo.
Hello.
London College of Garden Design these series of interviews together, and I seem to be in a car park when I've recorded them all. And I didn't intend to record an interview with Jo in the car park, but hold on a second, I'll play the intro music. And then we'll come back after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
So, Jo, welcome to the very salubrious surroundings of now current studio for the Sideshow.
I'm really impressed, sitting on a trailer in the corner of a car park in Battersea. It's great.
Is this the worst location you've ever done an interview?
It's actually, no, the worst location is outside Portaloos, outside some showground. That's not good. So this is luxury in comparison.
Okay, I've got one upmanship on the BBC. I'm only joking, lads. We last met in Chelsea. You've evaded me. My head's jumping here because it's like so many things you wanted to say to Heathcliff when you were a catty, but it never actually worked out. But that stems back on a bit of a genuine note to something I said to James Basson about having a respect for the individual or that person first, and then saying, but I also love what they do. What was that garden in Chelsea 2018, and how come I ended up standing in your garden talking about Guinness with James and Helen?
Yeah, how did that happen? But that is the great thing about Chelsea, that it brings together all those people that you want to see or you haven't seen for ages, and you get the most extraordinary kind of gatherings and combinations of people. I'm not saying you are extraordinary, of course you are, in a good way. And I don't know how that all happened, how the Guinness conversation started. I don't know. How did that happen?
I think myself and James ended up deviating off the point of... I don't know how you deviate off the point of your garden being compared to a graveyard, and us talking about how to drink 2 pints of Guinness at the one time.
But that's... what, you know, you were saying about James's garden and the graveyard, he dealt with that so well, didn't he? The whole, you know, that whole discussion around, you know, what his garden, the words that his garden provoked. And I think he was incredibly good-natured about it, because it was a beautiful garden.
I took two things from it. Maybe this is where the conversation is headed. There's a plane going over my head. Sorry about that. What I said was, if you take the best marketed things that happen globally, one is sports and the other is music. And when Jimi Hendrix sets a guitar on fire, should he be around and on stage at Glastonbury, that would be up on Twitter via the BBC within 2 minutes flat or less, one. And two, if there's a sending off in the Premier League and Man United are playing Arsenal, that clip it will be up on the internet within 2 minutes flat. And in horticulture, I've designed and built gardens that were, inverted commas, deemed controversial, but as I remind them, it's still just a garden. And the other side of that conversation is, I think I said to James, you remind me of the start of Saturday Night Fever, where he walks down the street and in his head he's got like a secret bulletproof vest on, and that's how Mom reared me, which is again how you conduct yourself. So albeit he was on a bigger stage and the sounds might have been a bit louder, I will agree with you, how he conducted himself was impeccable. In a long time since horticulture had anything controversial that left the inside back page of the property section and became mainstream. Does that make sense to you?
It makes total sense that he'd done something which, I mean, I seem to remember that he was the favourite to get Best in Show that year, I think. And but he did that, and the response wasn't like it normally is, oh yes, well of course, you know, that's a lovely garden. The response was, you know, the questions, like you say, the questions of controversy maybe, and that's a really good thing. And it was a beautiful garden, we all know that.
I'm deviating from the James Basson Memorial episode which was supposed to be the Andrew Fisher Tomlin Memorial episode again, but that's we'll get there in a bit. But I think I remember doing a garden some years ago where a man in a cricket judges type-esque uniform in a very wonderful accent, but he told me I should be expletive ashamed of myself and what I had done to horticulture. And I said, well, thanks for coming to see my garden. It's wonderful to speak to you too. Have you done things that have been controversial?
Ooh, I don't know. I think, have I done anything that's controversial? Let's see. I try not to be controversial. I'm just trying to think whether I've done things that have been difficult. The garden we did at Chelsea last year was possibly one of the most difficult gardens that we've ever done, and kept me awake at night, basically, because I designed this structure that was really, really hard to put together. But you have, you know, working in this industry, you're working with the experts, you know who to go to, you've got huge numbers of people that you can go to for advice. People like Andrew Fisher Tomlin are really good just to kind of ring at 7 o'clock in the morning and say, help, I've had a sleepless night, you know. So anyway, there are lots of people to who, you know, whose expertise you can call in, and it's all in call on, and that's all in incredibly supportive. So yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't know, do you think I've done anything controversial? I'm a bit worried that I haven't. Now that's made me want to do something controversial.
Well, if I take it in the music analogy, I think the Sex Pistols going down the Thames singing God Save the Queen was, inverted commas, controversial. And Debbie Harry and what Blondie did, which was the poster that I would have had in my wall growing up, wasn't, but I still thought she was a little bit
edgy.
A bit edgy, yeah, is probably there. But B, if I was to make you a music analogy, I think I'd probably put you in the Debbie Harry category.
Excuse me, will I just hug Peter for a moment? That is the best thing, and then I've got to tell everybody about that and carry that soundbite round with me. Yeah, I mean, what I say we, because I've got an incredible team, but what I always try to do is I always say to clients, let's avoid the pastiche, let's try to make, you know, we don't have a house style. People will often say, you know, you haven't got a house style, and that is because the garden is all about the client and the location and the house, of course. So we're not trying to impose one set thing upon a garden. So it's very much about the vibe you pick up, you know, when you're in that garden and when you're talking to that client. Because of that, it can, you know, there are new elements which which appear. We also, you know, I'm listening to the person that I'm dealing with, and if that person says, as happened, you know, a few months ago, and we've just finished building this garden, the client has said, actually, can we have, you know, that was going to be a children's playhouse. Can it be an adult kind of hangout place as well? And can we have it in the shape of a wedge of cheese? And that's kind of, yeah, fine, you can have that. Because, and actually that worked really well. You know, so I really, really do listen. And I can't, you know, I'm not saying, oh, that's not, you know, that's not our concept. That's not how we work. You know, we never design wedge-shaped things. We've never designed a wedge-shaped thing. So why should we do that now? Instead of that, you're thinking, you know, well, why not? This is an incredibly creative client. Most of our clients, we did a kind of a bit of a sort of inventory the other day, and we'd say 75% of our clients are within the creative industries, you know, film, TV, stage. It's fascinating how that's happened.
I'm 15 and I'm asking a girl to dance all over again, and I'll go back and say it, and Teenage Kicks comes on the radio, or Mark Bolan and T-Rex, and you're waiting for him to play the slow set. What I've always, I guess, admired on what you've done is you've managed to remain fresh. And I'll go back to another music analogy, but when you go from like a Love Me Do to a Sgt. Pepper's to a Let It Be, and you contrast the two of them in a conversation separately with John Wire, who we both know. I was talking to John about keeping on top of trends and remaining current. I think I used the analogy of U2 and how they're still around, and the Stones have done it, but Bowie didn't do it in the 80s, if that makes sense to you. Yeah. Or you seem to be always, without even breaking a sweat, you just always seem to appear like it's effortless. And I don't know how you do that, but I don't ever believe that you should see behind the curtains of the pantomime or the theatre either.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And when somebody said to me, I think actually it was this recent conversation about Michelle Hussein, who's admitted to sort of imposter syndrome recently, you know, there's a newsreader saying that, and somebody said to me, "Well, do you suffer from that?" And I'm thinking, well, you know, doesn't it? It's not so much imposter syndrome, it's that kind of, we're always thinking, oh, how do we do this? You know, everything is a challenge. I don't have the answer straight away. And I think when I first meet people whose gardens, you know, I'm helping them with their gardens, I don't have that answer. I'll say give five different resolutions probably for one space, and then blast four of them out of the water and admit that, you know, and say, and I'm also happy to admit, you know, if a client says to me, right, we'll never use that area, or I don't like that bit, you know, in design, at the design stage, very happy to say, fine, you don't have to have it. I'm not gonna, you know, it's not about me, it's not about you. I mean Andrew would probably laugh again if I said I don't have an ego. but I kind of, you know, it's they're gardens, they're meant to be, you know, good, pleasant places, not meant to look stale. I think want to shoot myself if I was just reproducing the same garden, you know, every week for different people. I mean, where's the fun in that?
You can answer me this in horticulture or not in horticulture, but what was the most terrible job that you ever did in your life, one? And two, what was your first step on the horticulture ladder?
Do you mean terrible as in bad design, or just generally hard work, you know, hard work?
I was talking to Andrew about this yesterday, and I said, you know, crap jobs and getting on the ladder. And I think I said when I first came out of Hort College, whilst I was building rooftop gardens, I was working in a kebab shop, and a guy came in and threw four of them at my head. He said, "What are you going to do about that?" And I said, "I think you'll find I'm going to clean it up." But what we were saying was, that's what you got to do the things that you have to do. You have to get to a point where college has paid off, and now I can concentrate on building my own business. And bearing in mind at the time I was 20 years of age, but I'm one of eight children. If you want to go, you know, yeah, put your hand in your pocket or figure it out, or don't go, one or the others. And so that was it.
Actually, we have one of those experiences probably about, I don't know if to say, so this is later on in what, you know, in my career, I suppose. And I've had, yes, those jobs that you take, and you take them for £200, you know, however much you're told at college that you should charge a good rate. You know, you, in a way, that's not realistic sometimes. You know, somebody isn't necessarily going to, if they know you're just out of college, they're not going to pay you the rate that they're paying somebody who's got 20 years experience.
What was the bit before you went and started Joe Thompson?
Well, I was doing something completely different. It was a sudden move. I hadn't necessarily shown that much skill in horticulture, shall we say. You know, I managed to destroy, my mother left me to look after the house plants and the garden plants and said, you know, water the house plants once a week and the garden plants once a day, and I got it all the wrong way around and I killed everything, you know, 2 weeks later. So I didn't really have a sort of reputation for horticulture, I suppose, but it was me being in London, having this small roof, a space on a roof, and we were in a tiny flat, and I just thought I could make this into something. I'd always been fascinated by space and architecture, and I went over, and it was Clifton Nurseries of all places. It was I went over there and just said, can you help me, how do I do this? This guy got out a drawing board, started drawing on it, and I said, you know, what are you doing? What is that? And he said, oh, I'm a garden designer. And it was a real light bulb moment, because I went to a school where, you know, you were going to be a doctor or a teacher or a lawyer. That was it. And gardening was not what you were encouraged to do. So I hadn't really ever, you know, paid it much attention, and certainly didn't realise that this was a career. And it was that moment, I can remember, you know, it was a real specific moment, and I think people have these, you know, those key moments in their lives that they remember. And I just remember standing there thinking, I want to do that, and whatever it will take, I will do it. And it was quite hot, so I wasn't working at the time, because I had I had a baby, basically. I was at home with the baby, and on maternity leave, and just signed myself up, found a childminder. You know, we didn't necessarily have enough money. It's not like I was a sort of lady who lunched, who could go and do that. So, you know, much to the horror of my husband at the time, we just did it. We managed. I mean, it was a killer to do. So it wasn't necessarily a crap job, but I was, you know, looking after a baby, trying to do stuff, and doing this year-long course as well.
You're back to that of, I can talk to anybody who, we were talking about egos earlier on, and eccentricity maybe, and how it's all a Madonna Vogue video essentially, and then you realise, well, actually no, he used to dig holes as well in order to get off the ground, and that was earlier conversation. But what was the point then where you turned around and went, you'll never guess what, I'm Joe Thompson?
Oh, I don't know if I've had that moment.
In my case, there's been milestones. I went out on my own at 24, going 25. I remember getting letterheaded paper and showing people and them going, seriously, it's letterheaded paper. And it was a small thing. It wasn't a show garden. It wasn't what I've been doing in France or any of that kind of stuff.
Oh, I still get excited about stationery now. Big time. Oh, I love that. There's nothing as much fun as ordering you with compliment slips. But I think there was a moment, I was talking about it the other day, when I did my first Chelsea garden, tiny little garden, 2009, and it was walking on site on the first day, walking onto site and realising that there were hundreds of people there who were all as invested as I was in their various gardens and exhibits and whatever else it was. And, you know, the show staff, so not just the exhibitors, but the show staff and the support staff, and that they were all, there was this whole world. And that, and I, rather than looking at it from without, I was within. And that, I think possibly that was the moment when I thought, I might belong.
Did you chat with the people around you afterwards who, when you had the baby in the small flat and you were going, and then it evolves into, I'm going to start a garden design practice. And when I did it, I know there was giggles because I was a very young pup, but I worked 18 hours a day. And if you are behind me, like in a rugby scrum, let's go this direction. If you weren't, then step out of my way or I'll just walk through you. I have drinks with friends of mine now who will turn around and go, you know, I remember you showing me, be it the stationery or, you know, the first job, or when I did the avenue of the golf club and driving it past and saying, you know, I just done that. But all of those dinky little milestones. But do you stand with them, and they were there at the very, yeah, very, very, very start, and how far you've come in such a very short space of time, when you consider that some people are in the industry 30 years and may never have. Do I call Chelsea the equivalent of putting on the white shirt and playing in a World Cup final? There's no greater stage than Chelsea in the world.
No, there isn't. And that's such an amazing analogy. And I suppose I haven't... Do you know what it is? I never have time to think about it, because every year, you know, since then, from that first garden and from that first conversation with... in fact, you know, Andrew Fish-Tomlin was there at the beginning. He was one of my assessors. And he just sat... He came and gave me my feedback, and we sat on the garden and we were talking. And, you know, this is quite important, you know, because it was very early on in my career. I think I'd only been, you know, been going a few years, but we'd never done anything like that before. And him saying... Him giving me the opportunity to do something the year afterwards was really important. So I'd say he was there at the beginning. But I've got... Yeah, well, obviously... The, you know, bearing in mind the story I told you about killing all my mum's plants, you know, you can imagine how the announcement that I was going to be a garden designer was met by my family. Much hilarity and falling about, you know. And so, but this was a long, you know, 20 years ago, so it was a long time ago. But I'm not ashamed of that. And I think some people, you shouldn't say that. You should say you've been interested in horticulture since you were two. Why? You know, it was a turning point. It was a Damascene moment almost. And it, you know, I threw myself into it. I stalked nurseries and you know, like you were saying, working sort of 18 hours a day, I lived and breathed gardens and garden design from that moment. And yeah, you know, so one of the people who first entrusted one of their gardens to me was a friend. And she did pay, you know, they insisted on paying me. And now she'll say, you know, she's very happy that she did. And I'm very happy that she took that risk. And I think there's a huge amount of trust. But there's a huge amount of trust anyway. I look at every client and think, wow, you know, you've got this, you know, whether it's a window box or whether it is a country estate, you know, because we all do. If it's a lovely window box, I'm very happy to do it. You know, I look at them and think, God, you're entrusting this to me. You know, this is your surround, you know, it's your place, it's your surrounding, and it's a very personal thing, which goes back to what I was saying before about, you know, the client having a huge involvement in that. And you've got to, you know, it's not my garden. I find it a bit weird sometimes when I see in magazines, you know, a Joe Thompson garden or whatever, I'm thinking, no, that's not a Joe Thompson garden, that's a Fred Bloggs garden, you know, that's his garden, it's not my garden, I just helped it, I suppose.
Well, you say that. No, I take entirely on board what you're saying, but I will say it's always theirs. However, I sometimes get a little bit precious about it and have to, the odd time I say, be reminded that it's not my garden. It is, in fact, theirs, but that's only because I care. When I spoke with Matt Keightley, we were talking about standing out in the crowd at Chelsea and people not knowing who you are and hearing them critique the garden. What are the things that you've maybe overheard, or do you do that, or have you heard that?
Oh, yeah, I haven't. I love it. I love it. And I don't want to embarrass people. I think once I absolutely... Well, yeah, I always fall about laughing because it's the kind of... You know, you only... It's like everything. You only hear the bad things because that's what you're focusing in on. And I... You know, it's just the kind of, oh, I don't like that. Which is, you know, I just fall about laughing because it's fine because you know, you can't expect everybody to like something and you want to know why. And one time I did have to ask somebody, what, you know, why not? But then realised they were so embarrassed that I'd said to them, oh, why not? I was genuinely interested. I wasn't trying to sort of show them up or, you know, but I want to know, you know, you want to have feedback. One of the worst things was, it was hilarious. We did a garden for London Square, a fresh garden in 2014. And I designed this bench that travelled through the garden. The whole garden was about a bench because in London Squares you have benches, and this bench started off swirling around trees and then travelled up into this into a terrace and then travelled down again, and it was curling and waving. So it was a sculpture as well as a seat. And I was sitting there with Dave Dodd, I seem to remember, just sitting there during the show, because it wasn't, you know, that was the only place to be on the garden because it was a strange fresh shape, you know, 3 by 12 meters. So Dave and I were sitting there, and because it was an island almost, we had no barriers, no gates to stop people getting on the garden, because, you know, it was obviously an exhibit, so people wouldn't come on it, we didn't think. Anyway, this family came and sat down on the bench with us, and opened their sandwiches and started having their lunch. So at which point I said very nicely to them, excuse me, you know, it's an exhibit. Are you okay to get, you know, not really allowed people. You know, I didn't say get off my garden. And they looked at me. And the mother, there was obviously a mother and then the kind of, I don't know, 25-year-old couple who obviously one of them was her child. And she looked at me and said, but you're sitting on this bench. And I said, oh, yeah, well, you know, it's actually, I designed this garden. So, and then she stood up after about 2 minutes, not straight away. They stood up, they sat there. There was a bit of kind of, there was a war of attrition going on. And then they stood up. And the mother looked at her daughter and said, oh, you could have designed this standing on your head. In my house. At which point, you can imagine, Dave, Todd, the only thing you can do is laugh. Because it's so, you know, people can be... I mean, that's possibly the rudest thing I've ever heard. And it was kind of fine. Well, you know what? Her daughter probably could. But all we could do is laugh and laugh out loud straight away. And it was possibly, again, the best thing we could have done because then they scuttled off. But, I mean, it's amazing.
Well, on the project that I'm working on in France, which the I don't want to harp on about this because it's the Joe Thompson show, but in a nutshell, a garden that is placed in a space that has been ravaged by war over history. The brief was essentially to bring happiness into the garden 30 foot below street level in the moat of this castle. And I got an email last week from the director of the castle, and it was two people sitting down on this 12 foot long curling stone wall smiling. And I thought, it's not even finished yet. And I've done it. And the sound of laughter or giggles in a garden, you just can't buy them. And it makes my voice quiver. It makes me get a Jerry Maguire moment. Have you had one of them on the opposite side? So I'm balancing out the thing where you've got one of them and went, girl's done good. Money aside, contracts aside, obligations aside. But you just turn around and go, this is a magic place in life to be because of what I have drawn and created and is now photosynthesizing with flowers and leaves that fall off in somebody else's garden.
Yeah, I do all the time. And I think I've got to stop. I've got to learn how to not sound surprised when I go back to the garden. So I go, oh, wow, this looks lovely. You know, you kind of know in your... And I always, oh, God, you know, like you say, oh, bloody hell, we did it again. You know, I know it's going to be okay. You know, I know it's going to be good. But I think what helps... I suppose the difference, say, with interior design, I would have been a terrible interior designer because you haven't got kind of Mother Nature helping you. What I think is, you know, I often say it's an intervention and then, yeah, and then nature does the rest. There's changing seasons. It can look, oh, God, look amazing in the snow. Well, I know everything looks amazing in the snow, but, you know, some I look at photos of what I've done and... You know, clients will send photos, you know, snowbound gardens and they look beautiful. But I do, so I think that's what I really respect that as well, that, you know, we'll do a certain amount, but that nature does it all. Nature change, you know, one year might be good for the tulips, you know, another year not. And I couldn't do it without that changing soft, you know, the element that softens everything. Does that make any sense?
You've just deflected an entire question of me saying, tell me how amazing you are, to Mother Nature has kind of done everything and we just threw a few plants in the ground.
Well, yeah, okay, maybe I need to stop doing that. But that's what I think. I mean, I would do, yes, of course, we change whole landscapes if we need to. Sometimes, you know, sometimes I don't need to at all. But... I realise I have deflected that, but it's kind of what I do, and I can't say anything else. It's sort of what I love this, the result of a collaboration between me, the client, and then, you know, and nature, I guess. And I love the way it turns out. Sometimes there are surprises, sometimes there are, you know, there are those happy accidents, and I can't think of, you know, I can think they usually happen in show gardens where something that's looking awful actually is suddenly, you know, is okay. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm not, I suppose I'm quite philosophical and not hugely, well, I am controlling. This is where I'm kind of, you know, I'll contradict myself.
It's at this point that I stop to change the battery on the microphone. I'll chat to you the week after next. At Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow, and sideshow.com.